Let me tell you a fun fact. Within the last two centuries, more than 90% of the world's millionaires have been created by investing in real estate. But if done incorrectly, without the right knowledge, required skills, or partners, it can also create a ton of problems and a lot of sleepless nights. You feel like sometimes there are way too many gurus out there trying to sell you on a weekend course, or just too much noise to cut right to the facts? Yup. We did too, and this is why we started this podcast. Our goal is to provide real estate investors, entrepreneurs, and enthusiasts with all of the most recent knowledge, secrets, tips, tricks, and tactics so that you can grow your own portfolios, increase your returns, net worth, and most importantly, create generational wealth for you and your loved ones. Remember, this is your real estate career. Information is your sword and shield. So eat hearty, prepare for battle, and grind your way to victory. My name is Tejas Gosai. I'm joined by my partner, Jeremy Moyer, and we welcome you to the Real Estate Investor MBA podcast.
So guys, we just came out of another great interview and presentation with Gene Trowbridge, who's an amazing securities attorney. If you don't know him, you definitely got to check him out at Trowbridge Law. What do you think, Tejas?
Always the best. I refer to him as the GOAT, greatest of all time. he just distills everything down. It's understandable, discernible. Since we had our programs with him, it's nice to see people understanding the concepts through what he's saying. And the fact that he's available to talk to syndicators and genuinely available is a rarity.
I totally agree. And the topic that, and it's a little different this time. We're not doing a normal Q&A interview. We're doing, he's doing more of a presentation. Like, so if you're not following us on YouTube, check us out. You'll see his presentation slides, but he is going over joint ventures and syndications, when to do which, and, you know, and stay within the framework of the law, when is the best time to do when and the other. And it's awesome. He just really breaks it down, like he says.
Yeah. And I think just for the listeners, even you and I, Jeremy, there's a lot of people that, are afraid to syndicate or don't understand the legality and are just, you know, don't know how to get past that. So it's great to have somebody like this share this with our guests. It's rare.
It is. I hope you guys enjoy.
Cheers.
All right, guys, it's Real Estate Investor MBA. I'm with my partner, Jeremy Moyer. We're very excited to have Gene Trowbridge back on our podcast. He was previously on episode, was it 31?
31, yep.
31. And awesome, great resource and super excited for today. Jeremy, you want to tell the listeners what we're doing today?
Yeah, absolutely. So Gene, we asked him to come back to do some presentation. So if you're following us on YouTube, that's awesome. You get to see the presentation. If you're not following us on YouTube, you definitely should be. you go check us out if you're listening to this on podcast, because Gene is going to be doing a sharing his screen to go over a presentation, some great information he's going to share today. And I think we can start with there. I know Gene's going to do a little bit of intro about himself and what he's done in the past, as part of his presentation. So I think we'll just hand it off to him.
Yeah. Gene, thank you so much for being here. Welcome.
Thanks, gentlemen, for that introduction. I appreciate it. I am Gene Trowbridge of the Trowbridge Law Group. And we're in the syndication business. What we do is we help syndicators, group sponsors draft their operating agreements. I do some mentoring to help you be successful in your business. And I've been in the business a long time. I was a syndicator for quite a while. Did a lot of syndications. I really left the business after a year of sending out 1,676 K-1s, about 850 investors. And in those days, there were no back office support staffs who would, today you could find someone to do all that for you. But all I had was my little staff and myself, and we spent months licking envelopes and putting stamps on things, and it just was a burden. So I decided at 45 to go to law school, and I've been an attorney for syndicators ever since. So I appreciate the opportunity to be in your YouTube channel, and I hope everyone subscribes to your YouTube channel because there's a lot of good stuff on there, okay? In this presentation, I want to talk about moving from joint venture to security. I get a lot of questions where people call me and say, here's the first question I get. Gene, I want to put five people together to buy a piece of property, and I don't want to do a syndication. Bad question. Putting two people together to do something, sharing money and expertise, is a syndication. The better question they should have asked is, I want to put five people together, and I know it's a syndication, but I don't want to make it a security, so can I make it a joint venture? I've heard a joint venture isn't a security, and that sounds great. And my answer is, not so fast. Let's talk about what a joint venture is, how it works, and let's talk about a security, and then we'll talk about what you would do. So if I have a chance with them and I have the time with them, I show them. I say, are you at your computer? They say, yes. I send them this PowerPoint and we walk through it. And that's just what I'm going to do right now, moving from joint venture to security. Here's a great picture of how most joint ventures would come together. You see, a joint venture is not a legal entity. You don't take title Jeremy and Gene as a joint venture. That's not it. You would generally take title as two general partnerships. I'd form a general partnership. You two guys would form a general partnership. And we would own a percentage of another of the general partnership which owns the property. Now, inside of this general partnership, I have a percentage ownership, you have a percentage ownership. We're both making decisions. We're both jointly and severally liable for everything. We sign all the mortgages. An example of this is if you drive downtown and where there was an empty lot, all of a sudden there's a fence around it, and it says coming soon, an office building. First National Bank and Trowbridge Construction, joint venture. Okay, so First National Bank probably formed a general partnership and threw in some money. Trowbridge Construction bought the bulldozer and came to the site and they got together. That's the perfect place for a joint venture. A joint venture of two unrelated, and that's a really important word, unrelated entities coming together to do an investment. And most of the time, it's going to be a general partnership because they're unrelated. Okay. It's not a limited partnership where there's a general partner and passive investors. It's not an LLC where there's a manager and passive investors. It's two or more entities, and no one controls the other entity's position. That's what a joint venture is, where there isn't any control. So if two or three, I don't know how many people makes it inconvenient on a joint venture, but given everyone has an equal say-so and everyone is going to sign and we need unanimous approval on everything, I think when we get past two or three people, we run into some mechanical problems of operating your investment. I think you guys will probably agree with me. So that's my picture of the normal structure of a joint venture. And sometimes you can go to an investment LLC where the investment LLC has a few members. And the members belong to the investment LLC. They join. That's what they're called. They're called members. But it's member managed. they're still independent. The decisions are still going to be unanimous. No matter what the percentage ownership is, each member would have one equal vote. And on all the major decisions, everyone gets a vote, and you have to be unanimous because no one is in charge of anyone else's money. These are independent investors inside of an LLC. You could call that a joint venture. That's another structure. You want to use an LLC, you want the members to be in there, but remember, no one is in charge of anyone's money. Independent, joint venture. And in both of those arrangements, what you've done is you've avoided the securities law, and you've avoided the securities laws because, as I said again, no one is in charge of anyone else's money. Everyone is independent. They make their own decisions based on their own money, and you need unanimous approval. But at some point in time, you get too many people, and that doesn't work. So here's a slide. What if there's more than one investor? What if in the members are going to go in there and there's too many members? Too many members to let everyone vote, to wait for unanimous decisions. No one can be in charge of anyone else's money. Too many members makes it trouble. It's clearly a syndication with more than one investor. It's clearly what it is. But are we moving to the world of securities? And you know, that's the issue with my book. My book is titled, It's a Whole New Business. And why is it a whole new business? Because real estate people don't understand that when we put a group of investors together and the real estate people want to make all the decisions and manage the investors' money, that we're moving to the world of securities. And so here's my picture of what a security is. We still have the investment LLC that's going to own the property. We have a bunch of members who are going to invest in investment LLC. But there are too many members to have it be a member-managed LLC where everyone has an equal vote and all decisions are unanimous. We need someone, you know, to herd the cats, someone to make the decisions. And that's why we need an experienced group to be the manager. And I would suggest you form an LLC for the manager. Manager LLC should be made up of more than one person. These people should be enveloped in an LLC for protection. They become the managing member of investment LLC. But because they're wrapped in an LLC, those individual members have trouble suing them. If you just go up and be an individual manager, you're totally open to everyone in the investment LLC suing you for everything you have. So why is this a security? Well, you go back to the days when the securities, when there were no securities laws written, and there was all sorts of investments that were going bad. And so the government said, you know, we probably need some laws to protect the passive investor. We need laws to deal with how much information they get before they invest. And we need laws to deal with who is raising the money, who is going to be the salesman of these things. So they came out with securities laws. And I'm going to verbally tell you what the law is, or what the definition of a security is, by staying on this picture. When a group of investors, and it could be one investor or more, invest in a common enterprise, that's the LLC, for an expectation of profit. This isn't GoFundMe. This isn't some charity thing. This is, we're investing in the LLC to make a profit. And the results of the investment are going to be driven by the promoter, the manager. So we have the investors investing in the LLC with an expectation of profit through the results of the manager. The government decided that in that situation, we needed laws to protect the members. So they wrote the securities laws. And the securities laws were designed to protect the public against fraudulent investments. And how that set of securities laws went, based on full disclosure. There are a lot of rules in the 33 Act, but one of the rules is you have to give full disclosure to all the investors. That tells me we have to have a private placement memorandum with the story, the operating agreement, the subscription agreement. That's a requirement of the Securities Law Act. Then the other securities law, which was passed in 1934, says if you're going to sell securities of other people, we're going to license you. And so there's quite a rigorous examination and background check process to become a securities salesman so you can sell securities of other people. We don't really have to worry about that with my clients, because my clients are selling their own securities. So just like real estate, for sale by owner says you can sell your own real estate without a real estate license. The issuer exemption in the securities world says you can sell your own securities without a license. So if you're the member of the manager, you can sell the shares in investment LLC without having a securities license, and that's pretty darn good. So that's what the law was designed to do. And the 33 Act is a criminal statute act. If you do it wrong, you go to jail. It defined what a security was, because we didn't know beforehand. It introduced the term investment contract, which is what I've been talking about. And it established that every security has to be registered with the SEC unless it's exempt. And that's where we want to be. We're going to sell investment contracts, and we're going to sell them that are exempt so they don't have to be registered with the SEC. And so what is an investment contract? Well, here are the words. Those are the words I've just given you. An investment of money in a common enterprise with an expectation of profit solely through the efforts of the promoter. And if you read anything about the securities laws, you're going to come up with a Supreme Court case that was called Howey. And in the Howey case, which was really a sale of small parcels of land in an agricultural company down in Florida, where the agricultural company says, you can buy this piece of dirt with these orange trees on it. We're going to sell off all the land and our farms, but we're going to manage it, and you're going to make a profit through our management. That went all the way to the Supreme Court to see if that was a security under the term investment contract. And they said, yes, it was. The people bought the dirt. The common enterprise was the agricultural farm. They were all told they could make a profit. And the agricultural company, which was called Howey, was going to do all the work. So that's the area of a security. And so this is where it differs from a joint venture, both in the two GPs who got together to take title as general partnership, or in the LLC where all the members took title, but there was no manager. Everyone was independent. Everyone was taking care of their own money. So the fourth prong that you see on the screen did not exist. Sure, it was an investment of money. Yes, it was. And yes, it was a common enterprise, either the general partnership or the LLC, no doubt about it. And everyone was expecting a profit. But without the manager activity, it's not a security. But once you have enough people, or you need the professional to be the manager to make the project work, you have the fourth prong solely from the efforts of the promoter. And all four of those put together, you have a security. So back here, whenever you have this box, whether it's a manager LLC, in my world, I was an S corporation, but what did I do? I still did exactly the same thing. I was a member of investment LLC. I managed all these people's money. They invested because they thought they could make a profit in whatever we bought. And I was managing it, so it was a security. Take away that box, and you're now into a member-managed LLC, which you could call a joint venture, or you're going to do a general partnership like we started. So that's the movement from JV to security. And it really boils down to, is there a manager? Is there someone making the decisions? Is there someone really in charge of the money that the investors have? So it's out of their control. They're not independent with regard to the management of their money. And if there is someone like that, the federal government has a reason and a purpose to regulate what's going on. And there's pages and pages of regulations. And some other day we can go into how do we get this offering exempt? Well, we get it exempt by doing a Regulation D, Rule 506 offering, which says, hey, all your people are sophisticated or accredited. You don't need us to police it. So we're going to make it exempt. And that makes the whole world happy. And just for an example, in the last 12 months that the SEC reported statistics, the exempt offerings, the private placements, was $1.8 trillion, guys. $1.8 trillion. That's five times more than the IPOs that were raised on Wall Street during the same 12-month period. It's not all real estate. Maybe a third of it is real estate. But every small business who needs capital goes to an exempt offering under probably Rule 506, either 506 B or C. So that's it. So there's how you can get a hold of me and my website and my Trowbridge Law YouTube, so you can subscribe, and that would be great. Thank you, gentlemen, for the opportunity to talk to your audience, and we'll see you next time.
Awesome. We love you, Gene. We'll catch you soon. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Okay, thanks, bye. Gene, so much for breaking that down.
Bye.